Welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast. Got a great show for you lined up today. Bobby Marks, the front office insider over at the Vertical, he drops by and we cover a lot of ground with Bobby, from the Celtics upset win over the Cavs to the NBA draft coming up to the all-NBA selections and what they mean for certain players that went down last week. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, there's a very easy way to support it. Go over to Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes, give us a rating, post a comment. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. Joining me on the pod this week, Bobby Marks, the front office insider for the Vertical, former assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets. Bobby's a great follow on Twitter. You can follow him there at Bobby Marks 42. And Bobby, there's a lot I want to get to, but we have to start with what we saw in Cleveland on Sunday night. And I think the spread was like 18.
And
you
16.
Had, yeah, you had to put $1 down you put $1 down to win 45 or 46 on the Cavaliers. I mean, it was just everything was lined up against Boston. They come out and they win. Now, I wouldn't have predicted a Boston win, but I did think that this lineup was going to get blown out, because I've seen this lineup before. And the one thing about it is it's very good defensively. When you put Marcus Smart in there, all of a sudden you've basically got, you know, B or higher level defenders at every single position. And when you do that, you can at least cause some havoc. And I think that combined with, you know, LeBron just kind of shrugging his shoulders and being indifferent to the game, I think that's what led to the win.
Well, and, you know, as good as Isaiah has been, then, you know, him defensively, you know, lets him hit, is not one of their best defenders. I thought it kind of leveled things off a little bit, and they were able to play more in control here with, you know, especially Smart at point guard. We were able to see what he's able to do, and each guy, their role became more, I don't know if it was the sense of urgency. I'm sure it was down, you know, 2-0, basically your back's against the wall, but they're, you know, in the second half, the value of the possessions, you know, in the first half, it got to a point when Cleveland built that lead where you had Al Horford coming down, taking a quick shot, got Cleveland out and running a little bit with Kevin Love as far as the ability to make a three. And I thought once they got to a point in the third quarter, it was like enough. You know, we're tired of getting our teeth kicked in here. And I thought that the value of the possession started to be increased a little bit more.
There are some searing hot takes out there, Bobby, about LeBron. it's based on social media. It's as if Michael Jordan never had a bad playoff game, ever. Based off that. And everyone is looking at this game by LeBron saying, well, this is just a further indication that he's not the greatest of all time. He's now, what, 10-1 in the playoffs this season? The bar is raised high for LeBron James, but it's now at a ridiculous level. Because he played like shit in that game. Let's not sugarcoat it here. He was bad. He was disengaged. I think he should have had to answer for it after the game. But the idea that this somehow diminishes LeBron in any possible way, like, do those takes, do they have to come back out on on Tuesday when LeBron comes out and scores like 45? Is that like, can we recycle those takes? Do we have to remind people of these takes? Because it has been a LeBron bash fest over the last couple of days.
Well, it's the same people who are probably waiting for that Golden State series. They just get to use it right now. And hey, I get it. He didn't play well, and he admitted that he didn't play great at all. I mean, he basically kind of took the foot off the gas, and it got, you know, I think, I don't know if it was because Kevin was so, going so well at the time, that he, you know, felt like he could kind of back off a little bit and let the game play itself out. And when they needed him down the stretch, he wasn't to be found here. But I mean, what he's done in this playoffs, I think, kind of makes up for maybe one bad game here. And I'm sure he'll probably have another bad game unlikely, I would say, in a game four or game five, but, you know, maybe in that next round against Golden State. But he has, I believe he deserves a pass. As far as how great he's played here.
A couple of things I want to unpack. Marcus Smart, the way he played. Now, nobody expected him to shoot like 60, 70% from three moving forward. But what we saw from Smart as the full-time point guard here, this is something that Boston coaches have seen for a lot of this regular season here. Towards the end of the season, I was hearing a lot about the way Marcus Smart was playing the point guard position. I think, you know, this was an opportunity for him. Now, I don't know if the situation unfolds in Boston. Probably not, because if it is Markelle Fultz at the top of the draft, and if Isaiah Thomas is there, I mean, there's only room for so many point guards. But I felt like watching that game last night, Bobby, we had a pretty good example of how Marcus Smart, who a few years ago was the sixth overall pick in the draft, he has great potential, I think, as a starting point guard in this league. This was one of the rare times in a big situation where he had the ball in his hands, he was asked to make plays, he was asked to make shots, and he stepped up in a big way. I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves in terms of trade value, but I feel like Marcus Smart really increased his trade value last night.
I do too, Chris. I mean, there's nothing better than a body of work than playing in a game three and be able to play like, you know, how Marcus did, you know, on Sunday. And it's funny, you know, if for the casual fan, you kind of, if you flip on a Celtic game, you see this, you know, it's like, what does he do? He does a lot of good, a lot of things good. You know, defensively is as good as it get. And you're like, well, is he a two? Is he a one? Can he run this team? And I thought last night he was able to, I thought he played so composed. I mean, I really did. And he wasn't flying all over the place. He was able to run this team. The ability to make the three last night kind of overshadowed a lot of things based on where he was coming into this game. But, you know, Boston going into the offseason now, you've got four point guards that could start on any team here with Isaiah. I'm a big fan of Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart. We just talked about, and now you'll probably add Markelle Fultz here. You know, four guys, and you know, it's like having four really good quarterbacks in the NFL, and now you're going to have to figure out. But you know, from an on-court perspective, he's going into his fourth year of his contract. He's rookie extension eligible. I think his value went right through the roof. I mean, this isn't an exhibition game last night. You're on the road down 2-0, and a backup point guard is moved into the starter role.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big game for him. And let's be clear. I mean, the most likely scenario for this series remains Boston going out in five games. I mean, we had Jonas Jerebko stepping in and making shots. Jonas Jerebko is out there. He's playing like he's literally got nothing to lose. He's not only making shots, but he's trash talking everybody. He's going at Kevin Love, LeBron. He's bumping with Darren Williams. He was going at everybody last night. Great moment for Boston, but let's all be real about the long-term impact of it there. I mean, they're just outmatched. They're outmatched with Isaiah Thomas, and they're extremely outmatched without him. But you mentioned Fultz, and we got into this last week with Woj and I and Gavoni here on the podcast about Fultz and the top spot in that draft. You know, Wick Grosbeck, the owner of the team, told me recently that they're exploring a bunch of different scenarios. When I talk to people in the organization, you know, they're saying there's no definitive answer here. Do you think that's just a smokescreen? A team that has the number one pick in the draft, how often is it that they know exactly what they're going to do with that top pick?
You should. I mean, I think it's a little bit different each year. I mean, I don't fault Boston. They're going to go through the process here. I talked to an agent who's got a player in the top four, top five, who's going to go in for a visit here. So they'll bring all their, I don't know what, Lonzo Ball, I don't know if his dad will let him go there, but they'll bring, Fultz and Tatum and, the Kentucky kids, probably Fox and, Monk, Jackson from Kansas. So, and they're big on storing intel here. So I'm sure they'll get their fair share of phone calls regarding that number one pick. I'm still in the camp that you don't do anything with that as far as from moving. I don't care who's on the board and who's on the table, unless it's, you know, one of these guys who maybe made first team All NBA. And I don't think that's going to happen. And I wouldn't do anything with that Brooklyn pick in 2018. I know the Nets have cap space to get better, but I still think they'll be a lottery team and possibly, top five pick for next year. So, but you've got to do your due diligence if you're Danny Ainge and, and Mike Zarin up there, as far as bring in all these players. Right now Fultz is kind of the leader in the clubhouse and evaluate all your different options.
Did you see the report that the Lakers would like to bring in Lonzo Ball and De'Aaron Fox for an individual workout, like a one-on-one head-to-head type of workout?
I did. It's funny. We went through that in 2010 with we had the third pick in the draft, and we had Derek Favors and DeMarcus Cousins, and it was like, well, you know, Cousins would only work out if Favors came in, and Favors, you know, would only work out if another, you know, and it reminded me of that. You rarely see, you know, guys who were in the top two, top three. Fox is probably right around five or six right now, work out against each other. For Fox, he's got nothing to lose. You know, I'm sure, you know, Ball will work out against them, which is somewhat surprising. You usually like to hide those picks a little bit here. So, but I never get it much out of a one-on-one workout. I don't know what that does unless you're going to play 5-on-5, and you can't do that in these workouts for two point guards to go one-on-one against each other, unless they're going to put some fillers around. I don't, if that's going to move the needle, then the Lakers haven't done their homework here.
You think that Lonzo Ball would actually show up for that?
If it's the Lakers, I do. I think his dad is so hell bent on getting that kid there that he will send him. I think that's the only place he'll send him. I really do, Chris. And it's, I think sending him there against another player would be a huge mistake. I mean, that's a rookie mistake from an agent standpoint. I would send him to Boston for a visit, and I'd have him work out. I'd have him meet Danny Ainge in that group. I would even consider him sending him to Philadelphia. It doesn't hurt. Especially, he's not like one of these kids who are kind of in the back end of the first round, and they're going to go on 20 visits here. You're going to go on 3 or 4 visits in a 30-day, you know, span here. But I don't think there's any benefit as far as for him to go to the Lakers and work out actually against another player.
No, there's no benefit, especially De'Aaron Fox, who just kicked the crap out of him in the NCAA tournament. I don't understand why anyone would think that's a good idea. I mean, you know, Lonzo Ball, if he doesn't work out for anybody, he's probably going to be the number two overall pick in the draft. I think there's enough of a body of work to make the Lakers, Magic Johnson, they love the story, the UCLA narrative there. I think there's enough to make them want to take him. I just don't see a Tatum or a Josh Jackson or a even a Fox working themselves high up enough to be worthy of taking that second overall pick. There's only downside for Lonzo Ball in doing that. If he does it and Fox goes in there and beats him up, if he goes out there and dominates Fox, how much more does that solidify his place in the mind of the LA Lakers? I think it would be lunacy to send him to LA to do something like that.
I always tell teams, you know, at least when I was in New Jersey and Brooklyn, and just talking to, you know, other teams executives during this process, is just don't get caught up in this hype right now. I mean, rely on your scouts that have seen these players when they were, you know, either they're in high school all-star competitions or during their career, either 1 year or two or three, or, you know, if they were a senior, and use that as really the body of work. The individual workout, Chris, is meant for your head coach and your assistant coach is to kind of get a feel for that player, if he is a teachable, you know, how can you work with him, you know, from a one-on-one basis, developmental stage. It's also the workout and the meet and the visit is for team, you know, your interview process, to meet with your psych, to take the player out to dinner, to get to know him. It's not to, you know, hey, this player shot 30 of 35 from three, and all of a sudden, you know, we have him fifth, but maybe he's third. I mean, I think you get in so much trouble like that. And, you know, I saw Keith Van Horn come in 97 and shot 40 of 50 from three. But at that time, Van Horn, you know, was the legitimate number two or number three, you know, best player on the board behind, you know, Tim Duncan. So, It's and I think where teams also get in trouble is when their coaches get involved in here, where they haven't watched these kids play during the year because they're worried about their own, you know, their own starting five or their own game going on. And when a coach kind of starts to give you an opinion on a player because he starts watching tape, I think that gets you in tons of trouble.
Okay, I ask you this often, both on our videos and occasionally here on the podcast, but because it seems like, you know, unless LaVar Ball lights himself on fire in the locker room, it's not going to bother you. You seem to be in the camp that, you know, whatever LaVar Ball does is whatever, and it wouldn't affect your decision on the kid Lonzo Ball. Obviously, this week LaVar has gone kind of next level. He had the comments on Fox to Christine Leahy there. Then he had more recently the Kyrie Irving stuff where he's talking about Kyrie Irving's mother who's dead. He seems to just be escalating to some degree, Bobby. Still any concern from you about, you know, drafting this kid when this father is such a I don't know, lunatic's the wrong word, but that he just says crazy stuff?
To be frank, I think he's a gimmick. I mean, I think that's what he is. But now it's getting interesting here. And you know, I was asked this question over the weekend, and I said, well, we still have 30 days to go to get to the draft. You never know what this dad could do. And now he's starting to be more, for me at least, an annoyance. The Kyrie Irving stuff really bothered me, you know, Chris. Yeah. You know, when you're talking about a, you know, why are you bringing that up? Why? And, you know, he did it with LeBron with his kids, I believe. Why are you starting to bring up other people, other players? Because now basically what you're going to do is put a target on your son's back when he gets to the league.
Do you think that Lonzo Ball scores any points against the Cavaliers next year? Like any.
Well, I know who's going to be guarding him, number 23. That's for sure.
Well, that Kyrie wants a piece of it at some point too. Like that'll be Kyrie's best defensive game of his career.
Yeah. And you know, what will happen though, Chris, is that when the son is drafted by either the Lakers or the Celtics or the the Sixers here, whatever the dad said is going to be is going to reflect on the organization now. So when he's spouting off about Kyrie Irving or another player, or you know, makes nonsense out of something here, then that's a reflection of the organization. And then it's going to be up to Magic Johnson and Danny Ainge or Brian Colangelo to clean up the mess here. And do you think these guys want to be dealing with the dad here? So it still doesn't bother me, Chris, but it's starting to be an annoyance right now.
I'm just wondering what the level has to be. You would be the most forgiving GM. You are the most talent-friendly GM I've talked to, Bobby. You really are. You are just, if the kid can play, and he clearly can, there's not much you won't suffer from the family.
If he couldn't, then I'd just drop him. You know, yeah, who wants to deal with that?
Let me ask you one more thing about the top of the draft. And it's something that's on Boston's radar, I'm sure. The idea that Isaiah Thomas and Markelle Fultz, how would they play together? Now, I've said before, and we talked about this in the last podcast with Woj and John, you know, we're in today's NBA where you don't have to have traditional ones and twos. Like your one doesn't have to be the 6-foot playmaker. Your two doesn't have to be a 6'6", you know, shooter from the outside. They've all become hybrids nowadays. I mean, a great example of that is what's happening on in Portland, where they had Damian Lillard. They drafted CJ McCollum. Now they have top three backcourt in the NBA. How do you feel about the idea of Isaiah Thomas and Markelle Fultz, both point guards nominally, playing together?
I have no concern. I really don't. I mean, it's all about, you know, I think you have to take the best available. It's funny because it's, you know, the biggest need probably for Boston is probably another big, I guess, from a rebounding standpoint.
Oh my God. Have you seen the number of bigs that have just brutalized Boston on the boards in these playoffs? Like there, I get so many tweets, Bobby, about Ante Zizic. Like, I'm just like Zizic is coming. He is going to be able to box out Tristan Thompson. Now, maybe he might, but you're talking about a guy playing overseas, stepping in and being able to bang with Robin Lopez and Tristan Thompson in year one. I'm not so sure about that.
Well, and that would have been the interesting debate when we get to the draft. If there was a big, you know, a five or a four that kind of was, you know, maybe number two behind Fultz, you know, then what does Boston do? They draft a point guard that's probably the best, or do you draft a big that's more, you know, based on need? You know, we don't have that discussion because it's a point guard, you know, driven draft. And there's also some wings right behind there. So, but I do think they can play together. And if not, then you figure out who the value is. And it'll be interesting because if they don't do anything with, Isaiah this summer, then he's an expiring, you know, expiring contract. And as you've seen those go, you know, there's not much, you know, the value there, especially at that salary. So I think you've got to figure out if you can make it work. And if you can't, then, you've got to, you know, who's your best asset to maybe go out and you know, fix up some of the holes that you have. You know, Marcus Smart will be an expiring contract if there's no rookie extension. Terry Rozier. I mean, there's a plethora. Avery Bradley's going into his, it's funny because I would be more open to renegotiate. If you ask me between Bradley and Isaiah, I would be more open to renegotiate Avery Bradley right now. I mean, I think he, you know, especially how he can play on both ends of under the court. I mean, him on defense, he's a pit bull out there, and he's not a one trick pony. I mean, he, from an offensive standpoint, and I get, you know, maybe he's a little bit undersized for two and everything, but he's got tremendous value for me.
Yeah, and he's young enough, 26 years old. He gets better every single year. I'm with you on Avery. I will say this. This is another scorching hot take that's gone out there the last couple of days. Boston is not a better team without Isaiah Thomas. I went through this back in, I think it was December, Bobby, where they beat Orlando by 30. And this is without Isaiah. And everyone's going, well, maybe they're better without Isaiah Thomas. Then they went out and lost three straight. I mean, they're not a better team without Isaiah. He's got his flaws, don't get me wrong. And he's not the complete, he's never going to be the complete player that some other elite players are. But they're not a better team without him. With him, they are the Eastern Conference finalists. Without him, they're probably beaten the first round.
No, you're right. I mean, they wouldn't be here without him. I mean, they wouldn't have got through Chicago. They wouldn't have got through Washington. And they wouldn't have been in an Eastern Conference final. So I need you, I think everyone needs to kind of take a step back here. And if they lose on a Tuesday night by 30 points or 40 points, I think that kind of will answer the question. But I think you have to look at the overall big picture with Isaiah this year and for him. And, you know, is he a franchise player? I mean, those don't come along, but he's certainly an all NBA player that he just earned last week.
We'll get back to Bobby Marks in just a second, but I've got to tell my listeners about a great product called The Art of Shaving. And anybody that knows me knows that I hate shaving. I got into this business just to be a scruffy, disheveled kind of reporter. I didn't want to shave more than once every 4 or 5 days. TV gets in the way. Other stuff gets in the way. Turns out I have to shave almost every day. And I don't shave without using The Art of Shaving. Founded in New York in 1996, The Art of Shaving has been helping guys look their best for over 20 years. The Art of Shaving has your total routine covered, whether shaving, beard maintenance, hair, skin, body, or fragrance. The Art of Shaving's award-winning products are formulated with the highest quality botanical ingredients featuring pure essential oils. The four elements of the perfect shave have been created to deliver smooth results every single day. You start by prepping your skin with the signature pre-shave oil, then create a thick, foamy lather with shaving cream applied with a shave brush. Shave, then replenish the moisture afterwards with their aftershave balm. Finish off the perfect shave with one of their five new fragrances. Each cologne has been carefully assembled for a distinctive scent. The Art of Shaving offers a convenient replenishment service that allows you to save on your favorite products while never having to worry. Here's how you get it. Our listeners will receive 15% off their first order and free shipping by using the promo code MANNIX, M-A-N-N-I-X. To get this offer, go online to theartofshaving.com. Use my special promo code MANNIX to get 15% off your first order and free shipping. Visit theartofshaving.com for the special offer, or for a consultation with a grooming expert, step into one of their many retail locations near you. Okay, let's move on and talk about the All-NBA selections that came out last week. You've been tweeting about it. We've been writing about it over at The Vertical. Some significant developments that came out of the All-NBA team, but I would imagine none more significant than what happened with Paul George not making the All-NBA team, not eligible for the Supermax extension, putting Indiana, taking basically one bullet out of the chamber for Indiana to try to retain Paul George. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of bad days for Indiana, 1 being, 10 being total disaster, where would you put it?
Probably about an 8, close to 9.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think he was going to make all NBA. I mean, I thought there was a little, I thought his play certainly towards the end of the year, warranted it. So now you rely on a vote to, have a player earn 200 plus million. And before I jump into the George stuff, Chris, I think the criteria for that is skewed. I mean, I really do. I don't understand how a player who earns all NBA first team, is the same as a player who earns all NBA third team, or all NBA third team center is the equal value of a player who, a Kawhi Leonard who earns, first team, when we're talking about this designated player veteran extension. And what's going to happen here is that I don't know how teams are going to be able to put a roster together. If you're paying John Wall $38 million San Antonio will be interesting with Kawhi, because they've always, be able to kind of find that middle ground there with these numbers. But jumping back to Paul George here is that now your options are, that option number one now goes off the board. You can extend him, which is not going to happen because it's only 20% off his contract for next year. It'll be like 4 years, $105 million. Do you have a comfort level enough with him and his Aaron Mintz to go through a year and basically take the player or the agent at their word that there is a good chance to be back? I don't know if you can do that, or you go into the trade market for him and everything. And it's interesting because him signing with it, let's say if they want to sign, you know, at the end of next year and he doesn't make all NBA, and it's like, I think there's not much of a difference, because I don't factor in that fifth year when these guys, because there's always the, you know, George is going to get another contract here. So it's kind of an equal playing field. So I think if you're Kevin Pritchard in that group, you've got to start looking at what your options are.
Yeah. I would even be stronger, I guess, in my assessment of that. I think you go to Paul George, you make him the best offer you possibly can. But if he turns it down and if he doesn't give you any kind of firm commitment for the next year, I don't see how you have a choice here, Bobby. We've seen what happened with Oklahoma City when Kevin Durant left, and they had a fallback. I mean, they had Russell Westbrook, a top five player in the NBA to build around in the future. Indiana doesn't have that. You know, Miles Turner's a good player. They got some other decent pieces on that roster, but I mean, they're a 20-win team if Paul George is off it next season. So I don't know, I see necessarily what choice they have other than to turn around and trade him. The question is, how much value does he have? I mean, obviously to a team like the Lakers, he would have high value if the reports are true that Paul wants to play there. But for anybody else, it would strike me as a pretty big risk if you're just taking Paul George on and his agent Aaron Mintz is telling teams like he's not making any kind of commitment right now.
Well, it's a huge risk. I mean, and the one thing they can also go back just, you know, from an option standpoint is they can do what Oklahoma City did last year with Westbrook, but to do so, they'll have to create some cap space. Maybe it buys you another 2 years. Maybe they can renegotiate his contract, bump it up to a max player, which is, you know, $30 million, and add another year there. I mean, that's also a possibility. And I think that could be, you know, legitimate option based on, you know, and still bring back Teague and Miles. So if he certainly turned that down, then, you know, I would certainly have to think about, you know, moving him though. But you know how guys on expiring contracts are, Chris. We've gone through it the last couple of years with you know, Horford in Atlanta, Millsap. You saw what Ibaka was able to you know, get back, basically a rotation player and a pick in the 20s here. So you know, that, I mean, that's going to be a tough decision. And if I'm the Lakers, I wouldn't do anything. Yeah. You know, if I mean, they'd still have to create some room next year, you know, with some of those contracts there. I'm sure they can do so, but I wouldn't gut that team to acquire. But there's a lot of smoke there when we talk about George and the Lakers.
I got my here's my unofficial trade scenario, Bobby, for the Lakers. Here you go. Ready for this? This is a no-brainer for me. Okay, so you draft Lonzo Ball at one, or at two rather. You take two of your young players, probably Ingram and D'Angelo Russell, maybe a draft pick as well, and you trade them to Chicago for Jimmy Butler. You play out next season with those two guys, and you let Paul George sign with you in the offseason. All of a sudden, you've got Ball, Butler, and George, two players in their prime, one several years from getting there. That's a team you can build around. Who says no to that type of deal if you're Chicago? If the Lakers package like most of their assets, not named Lonzo Ball, who says no there?
It's appealing. I mean, it really is. I mean, it depends on where, you know, Chicago sees, you know, Butler at. But that's another guy. I mean, he earns all NBA next year, and he's eligible.
Right.
You know, I mean, are you comfortable paying him $37, $38 million? God almighty. I mean, I would even, when you're talking about Paul George, I wouldn't be, you know, afraid if I'm Danny Ainge to pick up the phone. And not regarding the Boston pick, I mean, the Brooklyn pick this year and the Brooklyn pick next year, I've got a good comfort level with Jaylen Brown right now, so I'm not talking about him, but I wouldn't be afraid to do something like a Crowder, Zeller, and a Terry Rozier type package, and maybe give them the Memphis pick. And I understand that you're only getting Paul George for 1 year. But you use that year, you try to sell him on the future there, and how much of more of an appeal it is, what their future is compared to the Lakers there. And you'll likely be back in an Eastern Conference Finals. Will you be able to get past Cleveland? Probably not. But I think that's certainly a swing for the fences, because what happens is that although you'll lose Crowder, you've got Jaylen Brown coming up. You know, you lose Rozier, you still have, you know, Marcus Smart and Fultz there. So
plus a number one next year, yeah, to draft somebody else.
Exactly. You know, you've got that Memphis pick that could probably be a lottery pick in 2019. You know, it's top eight protected where that Grizzlies team is aging. So there's an appeal. I mean, I don't think there'll be much of a better offer if you're Indiana, if you're looking to move him, because all those guys have some length on the contract.
Yeah, I agree with you. And plus, I think you trade for a guy like Paul George and you put him in this Boston situation where you're competing every single night. The crowd is there every single night. The passion for the team is there every single night. I think it's a sellable. Plus, you throw in the fact that the most money is going to come from the Celtics in that deal. I think you're right. Now, I wonder, Bobby, and we can sort of use this to transition to Gordon Hayward, but how big a factor is it that you go to the West and for the next probably 4 years, you get the Durant, Curry, Thompson, Draymond Green, Golden State Warriors? Because Cleveland's one thing, and I know we sit here thinking LeBron's immortal, but at some point, he's got to slow down. At some point, some of those salaries, they cause you to change up your roster a little bit too much. So Cleveland's daunting, but I don't think Cleveland is as daunting as Golden State, I guess Golden State plus in the West, because you still have the Clippers, Spurs, these other teams. How big a factor do you think that will be, or that is, for free agents?
It should be. I mean, that team is, I mean, they're all in the prime of their career. I mean, when Klay Thompson is your fourth best player, I mean, come on, yeah. You know, or Draymond Green. And I get the Durant decision this summer will certainly have an impact on Iguodala or Livingston as far as what they'll be able to put together their bench. But I trust Bob Myers in that group. You know, you were able to find Ian Clark. You were able to draft Patrick McCaw. Yep. You signed McGee to a minimum. You got Zaza. So you'll have to go through that, possibly that same exercise again if Durant's going to sign for a max or what he does with his contract, or you can maybe even bring, you know, Iguodala back or Livingston there. So, but that team, I mean, and when you look at Cleveland, who knows what will happen to LeBron a year from now? He'll be a free agent. You know, you have to redo that bench again. Can you, you know, will the owner want to pay Kyle Korver when you're going to be a repeater tax team in next season? Darren Williams is a free agent. You know, you kind of have to remake that bench. You don't have any first or second round pick. So for me, Golden State has the more from a longevity standpoint than Cleveland does.
Yeah. That's something that'll be a factor, you know, for Paul George, but probably more so in this case for Gordon Hayward, because I mean, first of all, clarify for me the whole all NBA non-making of the team for Gordon Hayward, not as big a factor as for Paul George, right?
No, because what would happen to Hayward would have, he wasn't, it's different than what Curry, you know, Curry it can sign it as a free agent. Hayward would not, even if he had earned all NBA this year and had opted out of his contract, which is 16.7 for next year, he would not have been eligible to sign that as a free agent because he had not met the years of service. So basically what he would have to done is he had to opt in, if he earned it, which he didn't, he had to opt into his contract and then sign an extension that would take place in the 18-19 season for a total of 5 years. So he would have had to play out this contract. So he would have made more on the back end. He would have lost, you know, this upcoming year because his max contract will be, you know, 30.3, where, you know, he would have, you know, opted into 16.7. So I was never a big believer that, you know, unlike George, that was a little bit of a risk to, you know, to take there. And for Utah, you don't have to, you know, pay him that. You can negotiate up to that 35% of the cap.
So what do you think Boston's pitch is going to be? Is it going to be, we're in the Eastern Conference, we've got Brad Stevens, we add your scoring to this mix, and we might have a chance of knocking off Cleveland next year?
Yeah, I mean, your pitch is that you don't have to basically, you know, gut it. You know, you will have to make some decisions because basically to create the room to make a pitch for, you know, Gordon Hayward, you'd have to renounce the whole cap holds of Amir Johnson, who hasn't looked great in a series at all. I mean, he's this you know, he looks a little bit slow and he's been battered here. Jonas Repko, who's played well, you know, in that game three. Olynyk, who is your savior in game seven. And you would have to probably waive Tyler Zeller here. So that's your bigs right there to go after a wing which you already have from a Crowder, Jaylen Brown. And then you'd have to go out and find some bigs to help with Horford. So that's kind of where they would be from a cap perspective. But your sell is that we've got the number one pick. We potentially have a number, you know, top five pick next year. We've got all our picks going in the future. We've got, you know, some flexibility to kind of get better in this roster's intact. Plus we're in the East right now.
You know, if I'm Gordon Hayward too, one thing I'm waiting on, or at least I'm seeing how it plays out, is what happens with George Hill. Because Dennis Lindsay right now, he's sending out some signals that that it's not that they're not just going to pay whatever George Hill wants them to pay. That there's a pretty good chance that they could lose him. And if I'm Hayward, you know, George Hill's been a pretty big part of this team's success this past year. He was one of those key veterans that the Jazz brought in that helped them morph them into the team they are right now. You lose George Hill, all of a sudden you're back to not square one, but it's Shelvin Mack. It's hoping Dante Exum can develop as a point guard. I'm not sure if I'm Hayward, I want to go back necessarily to a team that's significantly weaker than the one I went to last year.
Well, I'm sure I'll have an eye on that. You know, with Hill though, Chris, that toe injury really has me concerned.
And he's never hurt. I mean, he's always hurt, I should say.
Yeah.
He's always hurt.
I mean, he missed, 30 games this year, including the, I guess three games in that Golden State series. So that's my concern
one of those, Bobby, is this one of those you have to spend money just to show your guy that you're willing to spend money?
Oh, it's one of those, agree to a deal, close your eyes, and hopefully it works out for George Hill, not this year or next year, but years 3, 4, and if it's, God forsake, a five-year contract. I mean, I think his salary is probably around 20. I mean, he's been underpaid. I mean, he's made $8 million. But I think if I'd be concerned, years 4 and 5, I'd certainly want some protection on maybe that foot. I mean, he'll have some suitors out there. He'd always, it only takes one team to overpay. But what's your backup? Are you comfortable enough on, Dante Exum and Shelvin Mack? And then you kind of revert back to maybe a year ago, a team that was, fighting to get into the playoffs. I still think they would be a playoff team if Hayward came back and no Hill. But I clearly think they take a step back. They're, instead of a top four team, then they go back probably to the, 7-8 range fighting to get into playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough call. I think it's going to be a dogfight between the Celtics and Jazz for Hayward. And that's going to be very played out very publicly over a couple of days in July. All right, I'll get back to Bobby Marks in just a minute, but I've got to ask you, what if you could find anything in seconds? Now you can with Tile, the tiny Bluetooth tracker that makes finding your things easier than ever. Simply attach Tile to your keys, wallet, laptop, even your bike, anything you don't want to lose. Finding your things is easy. Just open the free Tile app on your phone and see your lost item on the map. Then quickly find your item by making your Tile ring. It'll be back in your hands in seconds. And if it's your phone that's missing, just double press on your Tile to make it ring, even on silent. Every day, over 2 million lost items are located with Tile. Join the millions who have used Tile to help find their lost stuff. Get yours today at gettile.com/Mannix and save up to 30% per Tile on a multi-pack, plus free shipping. And because Tile makes the perfect gift, for a limited time, get a free gift box with a multi-pack order. Go to gettile.com/Mannix. That's gettile.com/Mannix. All right, I want to ask you about, and I've got to go back down this path, Kristaps Porzingis and the Knicks, once again, still in the news. They haven't played for like 2 months, but here we are again. The latest news that Phil Jackson reportedly met with Porzingis' brother, who's also his agent, and also the Knicks fired an assistant coach on their staff, Josh Longstaff, who was Porzingis' like personal coach on the staff, like the guy he was closest with, the guy who went to Latvia last year, the only Knicks coach last year to attend Porzingis' camp last summer. I mean, is this, they're, not one of these things is a disaster in its own right, but you keep adding these things up, Bobby, and just, it just doesn't make for a good relationship. So I guess my question for you is specifically, if Porzingis stays in Latvia all summer, how damaging, if at all, is that for the Knicks?
Well, it's damaging that they hadn't met with him.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically using his brother, who's a good guy, I mean, and is out for the best interest of his brother, as you're kind of the mediator here. I still can't believe, Chris, that they didn't meet with him before he got on that plane to go
home.
How
do you let him get on the plane? How do you do that? This is your franchise player, and you're just letting him hop on the Delta shuttle to Latvia.
I mean, it's not like he flew like private out of Teterboro here. God, I'm sure he was at JFK for 2 hours waiting in the Delta lounge for, couldn't you have met him there a little bit?
And that, he's like, the 7-footer with the blonde hair.
Yeah. I mean, he blew off the exit interview, and I would have been running in the car driving up to, wherever he lives in Westchester County to try to figure out what's going on here. And now you're going to wind up going to probably a whole summer with him over there playing for his national team. And your first correspondence will probably, at least face to face, will be in September. So I mean, they continue to amaze me. I mean, they really do. I mean, it all comes down to it's how do you develop relationship with your best player? And they haven't done it with Carmelo, and now you haven't done it with Porzingis. Now you've got the assistant coach whose contract hasn't been renewed, so that certainly doesn't help your process, you know, with this. And I always said, you know, hey, I understand you're on a rookie scale and it's a cheap contract and you have their rights, but they're I saw it with David Falk and Greg Monroe in Detroit a couple of years ago. I mean, don't be afraid to sign that 1 year qualifying offer to make you an unrestricted free agent the following year.
Yeah, and I would imagine, and you've had young players, Bobby, you know about the sort of the developmental process. I would imagine, and maybe it's different for foreign players because they want to go home, but I would imagine having your hands on these guys, sort of, you know, metaphorically speaking, is incredibly crucial to their development, especially for a team like the Knicks, who's hell-bent on going with the triangle system. Having Porzingis in Latvia over the summer, he's going to be working on his game, obviously, trying to get better, but not having him around your coaches for, you know, months at a time, because people don't know. I mean, maybe they do, but the only time you get better is in the summer. Nobody gets better during the NBA season. The summer is when you get better as a player, when you become comfortable. There's no practice time for the most part during the regular season for the NBA. It's all about the games, preparing for the games. Where you get better is in the summertime. And I can't see how the improvement of Kristaps Porzingis is maximized by him spending his entire summer in Latvia by himself and away from Knicks coaches.
One thing to draft a player, it's another thing to develop them. I mean, it's you know, you gotta, if you're gonna go that route as far as, and you know, and we know where the potential could go here, but it's a wasted opportunity if you don't take advantage of the summer. I mean, that you're right. I mean, that's the way. That's really, once you get going in the season, your bodies start to take a toll on it, and then you start playing and practices become marginalized here, and you're traveling all over the place, where now you've got, you know, 4 months of a kind of a clean slate during, you know, during the summer, July, August, you know, early September here. But I don't know, Chris, I don't know what to tell you regarding the Knicks. I'm sure they'll draft a point guard who will fit into that triangle.
Oh yeah.
Or hope they do. I don't think the triangle is used that much in college. So we'll see where that goes. But, you know, but they still got to clean up, you know, it's like clean up on aisle four, which is Carmelo Anthony. I mean, they still got to clean up that mess. And now you've got another mess with Porzingis.
I don't see how the Carmelo stuff, and we don't need to get too deep into this again, but I don't see how Carmelo ends with anything short of a buyout. I just can't see. I can't see anybody giving up anything significant for him or even insignificant for him. And I don't see Carmelo waiving or altering that no trade clause anytime soon. I think at the end of the day, the Knicks are going to have to waive him and then eat the rest of his salary.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about it. I mean, I think what Leon Rose's agent's going to have to do is go out and talk with teams with the Knicks' permission to see what his value would be if from a free agent standpoint. Can you get 2 years, $30 million, you know, $15 million per year, maybe? Can you get, you know, somewhere, you know, 2 years, $24 million? Take that money and use what's owed by New York as an offset, and maybe, you know, give back a little bit, and then they can, you know, I saw it in Brooklyn with Darren Williams, and maybe stretch out that money and give them some cap relief. I mean, I think that's kind of the best route, instead of taking back some contracts that you don't want, and there's not many deals out there where you can do it. I know the Clipper deal has been mentioned, that Boston, I don't think Boston will go down that road, but I think when we get to early July here, I think that's certainly something that could be on the table.
Yeah, I think the Clippers might be desperate enough to at least kick the tires on that, because anything to extend this window, and Carmelo, especially if they lose a guy like J.J. Redick, he'd certainly be more scoring that could help them. But I don't know. I mean, I still think just waving him outright is probably going to be what it comes down to with the Knicks. All right, let me finish with one thing, Bobby, and this is more of my a little bit exasperation here with how some of these processes have gone. You got the Atlanta Hawks out there looking for a general manager, and I think you know where I'm going with this. You've got the Orlando Magic looking for a GM. Maybe it's going to be David Griffin, maybe not. We don't know how that's going to work out with the Cavaliers. Where is Sam Hinkie in this process? I need to know where Sam Hinkie is in this process, because I was in the drawing room on draft night, and the ashen faces of the face of the Sacramento Kings representative, when it turned out to be they had third pick, and then they had to flip it to the Sixers for the fifth pick, and the Sixers get their 2019 pick outright. These are all Sam Hinkie moves. Now, I know the guy was not the easiest in the world to deal with. He was terrible by and large with the media. He wasn't great talking to player agents. But at some point, can we look at the roster the Philadelphia has and the treasure trove of assets that Brian Colangelo has to play with right now and say, well, maybe this guy kind of did a good job out there. Maybe we should bring him in for an interview because, you know, the Atlanta Hawks, Bobby, they're basically in the same situation, or a little bit better, but kind of the same situation that Philadelphia was in when Sam Hinkie took over. They're a playoff team, but they're not a good playoff team. They've got some assets, but they're not good assets. I mean, they would be ripe for a teardown if I was a general manager like Sam Hinkie. So I don't really understand why this guy is still radioactive amongst NBA teams, because the 76ers are the only team he's ever built, and looking at the non-playoff teams, that's without question the best team out there of that bunch.
I agree. I don't know where he is in this process. You know, here or Orlando. I've said all along that I think he deserves an opportunity at least to meet with these teams for them to kind of more of a filling out process where. And I think it has to be give and take. Where, you know, if it's the owner of the Hawks or, you know, Alex Martins of Orlando, where, you know, you're picking and you're right. I mean, you hit it right on the head regarding Atlanta. It reminds me of Philadelphia back then, where it was a playoff team and they were kind of like, you know, kind of in that crossroads. But he deserves it. I mean, he does deserve an opportunity. I'm not saying to hire, but it deserves an opportunity considering that Atlanta is bringing in, you know, 15 to 20, you know, people. And I think Chauncey Billups has a bright future and everything like that. But I think, you know, if you're going to bring in, you know, Chauncey Billups and interview him or meet with him in Los Angeles, that, you know, then you should just drive up the coast to, you know, Northern California to San Francisco or
Oakland. He's just sitting around some coffee shop right now, like reading, you know, Dickens. He's just hanging out there. He's got a beard now. He's just laying low. I mean, just somebody go find him.
Sit in the back where he's, you know, he's teaching classes at Stanford, you know, sit in the back of the classroom and everything.
Audit
but
it.
No, I mean, I think he deserves the opportunity because maybe it's something that he presents to you when he's talking about Atlanta where, hey, this is how I would do it. This is what I would do with Paul Millsap, or this is what I would do with Dwight Howard. And if anything, you can use that as a guide for, you know, for the offseason. So it certainly wouldn't help, you know, during this.
No, and think about it. He got killed for what he did in the 2014 draft. He drafted two guys that weren't able to play for at least 1 year in the case of one. Well, it turned out to be two for the both of them. He drafted Embiid at number three. Now, people were jumping up and down saying, oh my God, this shitty Sixers team, they can't, they need another guy that can play. Let me tell you the next five picks in that draft, Bobby. Aaron Gordon, Dante Exum, Marcus Smart, Julius Randle, and I'll throw in Nick Stauskas for the whole punctuation mark there. Would you rather have any one of those players right now than Joel Embiid? I'll answer that for you. No. Hard no on that one. then there was Dario Saric, who they made the trade. Orlando, they wanted Elfrid Payton, so they made the flip. Orlando gets Payton, they get Saric. Is it even a question which one of those players that you would rather have right now?
It isn't. And going back to Embiid, I mean, I would rather have Embiid for 30 games this past year than all those guys for 4 years during a rookie contract.
Combined.
I mean, we were talking about building him a statue, you know, sometime during the year. I mean, if he can just stay healthy, I mean, he was the overall number one consensus going into that draft before the foot issue kind of, you know, came into play. And that's what dropped him in that draft here. But the, you know, the Saric pick, I mean, there's a player that might be, you know, rookie of the year possibly. I mean, and it was worth it was worth the wait. So, you know, from a draft standpoint that, you know, there's a lot of credibility there. So, you know, will he get the opportunity? I doubt it. I mean, just from where we see this process is going.
I mean, there are things that, like we said, there are things he could do differently. I think one of them is that he could find a way for his teams to be bad, but not biblically bad. You and I have talked about this before, but you know, when Jerry Colangelo was the one that pushed for the Ish Smith acquisition, like Ish Smith was hailed as this conquering hero coming to Philadelphia to solidify the point guard spot. They still lost an absurd amount of games along the way. They just weren't getting tattooed every single night. And Ish Smith, I think, played a big part in that. I think that you know, like anybody else, like, you know, Bill Belichick in football with his first job to his next one, you learn from your first experience and you improve on. Anyone thinking Sam Hinkie is going to be the exact same guy in his second go around, is just dumb. They're just dumb because that's not how it works. People in all walks of life, they take from their experiences, they learn from them, they get better, and they use it in the next job. Whoever gets Sam Hinkie the next time around is still going to get the high-level general manager and talent evaluator that he was in Philadelphia, plus someone who's better from his experiences.
I always said that the person who gets that second job, if it's a coach or a general manager, you should be better the second go around because you've probably been out of work at least a year or two. You can reflect as far as, you know, a lot of, you know, at least when I, you know, got let go by the Nets and everything. I mean, I just took a month off and reflected and wrote down and started a journal and kind of pros and cons, positives and negatives and kind of what I would do differently and everything. And I'm sure that's what Sam did. And I think a lot of it really goes back to, and I'm sure he learned from the Okafor situation as far as the off court that, you know, I thought, and I always said that was kind of the nail that in the coffin there, being more upfront with the media, not giving what his plan would be, but kind of giving, you know, a little bit more media access than he had in before. And in Atlanta, you know, would you tear it down completely to the studs here? I don't think you have to because there are some young pieces there, but there, it certainly would give you a different perspective.
You know, what's scary is as well positioned as Philadelphia is for the future. Could you imagine if they drafted Porzingis over Okafor that year?
He'd probably still be there.
Like how terrifying that team would be right now with the Embiid, Porzingis, Saric front line. You know, I guess throw in Ben Simmons in that mix, you'd have to trade somebody. But I mean, good Lord, man. Like that would be, I mean, that embarrassment of riches isn't even a strong enough way to put that.
No, I mean, and that's
his one whiff. Like, well, yeah, I mean,
that's the draft. I mean, but that's the draft for you. I mean, you know, you're lauded on the guys you hit on. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of teams out there who like that Malcolm Brogdon right now, who went in the 30s. I mean, you know, and then you get, you know, the ones that you miss out on become more, you know, more scrutinized. And that was certainly a miss there.
All right, Bobby, I appreciate it, man. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Chris.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Bobby Marks for joining the show. A reminder, you can check out Archive Podcast on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, leave a comment, post a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.